The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 30th, 2018.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do, because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, what a beautiful day it is here in Sonoma County. And my heart goes out to all those folks in Lake County, Mendocino County, that are suffering from all those horrendous fires. We here in Sonoma County really can relate to what you're going through with the evacuation. And just keep your fingers crossed that it's going to come to an end, and hopefully everybody will be okay. It's these fires are really, really scary, that's for sure. I have a very, very special guest with me this morning. Joining me in the studio is Gay Teresa LeBaron, who is an American newspaper columnist, author, teacher, and local historian of Sonoma County, California. She wrote for the Press Democrat here in Sonoma County from 1961 until her semi-retirement in 2001. She also co-authored two books on the history of Santa Rosa, California, and I want you folks to know, my listeners out there, that I'm not only thrilled, but I'm extremely honored to have her in the studio with me and to be able to do an interview with her. Well, this was a very special week as we celebrated Ken's birthday. Happy birthday, Ken. As a surprise, would you please put on the song that we have right now?
Okay.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, dear Ken, and I want to wish you many, many, many more happy birthdays, and a special shout out to all the folks who came to our celebration. It was just absolutely marvelous. You know, Ken, you are my rock. I want you to know, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting the show and being here every week with me, and happy, happy birthday again.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I love this, folks. It's live radio. You know, you really get the sense of what is going on today and every day. Anyway, today is July 30th. July 30th. Wait a minute. Where did July go? 1, 2, 3. It was gone. Well, it is the end of the month, and this is the last Monday of the month. And as we do every last Monday of the month, we do the Women's Spaces Pledge. And I got some interesting emails the last 2 weeks. And one of the emails was, as a woman wanted to know the history of the pledge. So I'm going to give you a little background. Since we are going to be talking about the historical aspects of Sonoma County, let me give you a little bit of history about the Women's Spaces Pledge. I wrote it for my grandson, Ryan Jensen, who, as I've announced several times, is going to make me a great-grandmother. And what happened was is that he came out of daycare crying that his daycare teacher said he was a very bad boy. And I looked at him and I said, "You're not a bad boy. I mean, he's just a young kid. I mean, how can he be a bad boy?" And I says, "Repeat after me." And I made this pledge up. And for the next 15 years, you know, through saxophone lessons, through junior high school and high school, all through college, we would to share the pledge together. And then one day Ken and I were talking about the show, and we said we needed something that was kind of give us a signature that people could remember us by, you know, so we would be just a little bit different. And so I decided to do the pledge on a weekly basis, and then we changed it to a monthly basis. And also, if folks want a copy of the pledge, you can go on Women's Spaces, www.womenspaces.com, and you could print it out. If you'd like, email me, and I'll send you one of my special cards. That's Elaine at womensspaces.com. www.thewomaninyourlife.com. So let's do the pledge. I mean, to be honest with you folks, you know, before I come in the air, I do the pledge about five times because I have to remind myself that it's not me, it's the program trying to get the information out, and that my self-esteem does not depend whether somebody likes it or doesn't like it. The idea is just to get it out on the air. So let's repeat the pledge together. And if you don't mind, Gay, if you would join me, and also Ken, I will say it first and then just repeat after me. Okay, here we go. The Women's Spaces Pledge. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Wow, that is so powerful. And you know, like I always say, higher power, whatever your higher power is, it could be the rose in your garden, it could be God, it could be Jesus, it could be Muhammad, it could be the air you breathe. Whoever your higher power is, that's who you inject. So I'm going to say it one more time and just listen to it and kind of absorb it. And after we do the pledge, this time I will have a few announcements. Okay, here we go. Just listen to me and kind of absorb it. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Now, in today's world, why is that important, particularly for women? Because we need to stand up. We need to stand up and say enough is enough. You know, we want a safer, more secure world for ourselves and for our children. And in order to do that, you have to have self-esteem. You have to have self-confidence. And I know when we listen to the interview with Gay LeBaron, we're going to get a lot of hints. Here's a woman who wrote 8,000 columns. That takes a lot of self-esteem. That takes a lot of inner knowledge. So there's a lot of things to think about when it comes to self-esteem. So I'm going to say it one more time. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Remember that, Elaine. Oh, I will. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to that and for saying it. And if, like I said, if you want a card, just email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. I'll be happy to send you one. You got to, of course, send me your address. And if you just want to, you know, print it out, just go on Women's Spaces, www.womenspaces.com. Well, we have quite a few announcements to give right here. First of all, I want to remind you to put on your calendar and make sure you write on your calendar that you write August the 11th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Howard Park Gazebo in Santa Rosa. As most of you know, I am the president also of the National Organization for Women, the Sonoma County Chapter, and this is going to be one of our summer events. So I'm really looking forward to seeing people. So that's going to be on August 3rd from 1 to 4 p.m. and it's going to be at the Howard Park Gazebo. That's August 11th. Wow, I can't believe it's going to be August. I mean, where does time go? I mean, here, Ken just had his 70th birthday. You know, I'm 78, and I'm thinking to myself, my God, it's going by real fast, isn't it? Okay, well, we've got a real important event happening this Friday, and that's going to be August 3rd. And the time, they are not quite sure now, but you have to call the Rialto Cinemas in Sebastopol. They're going to be doing a filming of the screaming Dark Money. It is a political thriller about corporate money and elections and Move to Amend, an organization dedicated to passing a constitutional amendment that would mandate that corporations are not people. And that money is not free speech. So it's an interesting film. So that's going to be August 3rd at the Rialto Theater in Sebastopol, California. Also on Sunday, August 5th. I mean, this always just breaks my heart when I think about this. You know, I really do. It does. The Peace Project is a project of the Peace and Justice Center, and it's going to be Nuclear Remembering Day. I mean, it's all about the bomb that was dropped during World War II in Japan. And it's really, whenever I talk about it, there's just something about it that just breaks my heart. When it happened, I was only 5 years old. You know, and I have some recollection, But it was a major event. So the Peace Project is committed to creating a world of peace free of nuclear weapons where people can learn to live together in harmony and peace. So if you want to join and you want to be part of it, it's going to be happening on Sunday, August the 5th from 11:30 to 3:30 p.m. And it's going to be happening at the Helen Putnam Plaza in downtown Petaluma. And that's going, if you want to find out more information, go to SoCoPeaceCrane.org and you can find out more information about what is going on. And then next Monday, August 6th from, 8 o'clock a.m. This is amazing. There's going to be a rally, a march, and nonviolent direct action to commemorate the U.S. atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That's going to be happening at the Livermore Lab in Berkeley. So look up Livermore Lab, and that's going to be on Monday, August 6th at 8 o'clock in the morning for folks who are open to doing that. And also, I want to send out condolences to my dear friend, Carol Hyman. Her husband, former Black Panther, a big man, Big Man Howard, passed away last Monday, and our condolences go out to her and the family. He was a original member of the Black Panther Party and contributed a lot to the educational process and also helping they had morning breakfasts for the children in that area. So our condolences go out to her, and a special thank you for all the work that he did on behalf of the children and behalf of peace on this world. Well, that's a lot to think about, lots to do. But, you know, there's one thing about Sonoma County and also the whole North Bay area. You don't have to be bored. There's always something you can do and some way to get involved. Well, we're going to take a musical break. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking to Gayla Barron, who is our local historian here in Sonoma County. And I thought this would be a great song to play before she comes on. It's called The Ones Who Came Before Us, and it's sung by Bev Grant, because we're going to be talking about a lot of the things and a lot of the people and a lot of the situations that came before us to allow us to have the beautiful city and the beautiful county that we do have here in Sonoma County. So here we go, The Ones Who Came Before Us, sung by Bev Grant, and when I return, joining me in the studio is Gayla Barron, an American newspaper columnist, author, teacher, and local historian of Sonoma County, California. She wrote for the Press Democrat here in Sonoma County from 1961 until her semi-retirement in 2001. She also co-authored two books on history, on the history of Santa Rosa, California. So here we go, The Ones Who Came Before Us, sung by Bev Grant.
We reach the edge of an opening, a breaking through, and we know the situation calls for something new. There are times we cannot see what's just ahead, but still we know there is a life to be led, a path to follow, and we must go, and we must go. When
Yes, the ones who come before us, they make the way for us, definitely. For folks just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. And I want to remind my listeners, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holt. And without further ado, I want to introduce my special guest. Joining me in the studio is Gay LeBaron, who's an American newspaper columnist, author, teacher, and local historian of Sonoma County. Welcome, Gay. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you, Elaine. Nice to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. I mean, it's just an honor. I can't believe that I'm sitting across from you. I mean, all the years that I've read your columns and all the history that you brought to us is just amazing to me. So I'd like to tell my listeners just a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Certainly.
And I hope that I do you justice. I mean, I just had such a good time just reading so many different things about you. So this is what I gleaned out of it. Gay Therese LeBaron is an American newspaper columnist, excuse me, folks, author, teacher, and local historian of Sonoma County, California. She wrote for the Press Democrat here in Sonoma County from 1961 until her semi-retirement in 2001. And I understand you are still writing two columns a month for the Press?
Yes, that's true.
Oh, so you're really not retired.
I have never really stopped writing. I just stopped writing every day.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you produced more than 8,000 columns for the Press Democrat, ranging from human interest to cultural events to ethnic history to local politics. At one point, you published six columns a week. and was considered the premier columnist of the paper and had a leadership survey confirm that hers was the most popular feature in the paper and became a local celebrity. Congratulations.
Actually, I think I was behind Ann Landers, but I'm not sure.
Oh, really? Well, we'll put you ahead of Ann Lambert for this show. Gay also taught Sonoma County history at Santa Rosa Junior College and at the Lifelong Learning Center at Sonoma State University. In 2001, LeBaron was gifted her interview notes and research material to the Sonoma State University Library, which entered the material into a special collections department. In 2003, the library added the Gay LeBaron collection to its online catalog and also opened a Gay LeBaron website for the use of students, researchers, and community organizations. And one thing I know about the Sonoma State Library, being a graduate of Sonoma State, it is one of the finest libraries you can go to and so well cataloged. It's amazing. Just recently, in 2015, Mike Thompson, Congressman Mike Thompson, named her Sonoma County Woman of the Year. And in 2016, she received the California Community College Distinguished Alumni Award from the Community College League of California. Wow. Is there anything else you'd like to add to that amazing, amazing?
No, it's plenty. Thank you.
Oh, no.
I'm very gratified for the attention paid. I'm particularly gratified for the archive at Sonoma State, which students use, and that makes me very happy.
Well, because you have so much history. I mean, it's amazing some of the things that you come up with and all of a sudden you read about. It's just stunning. Actually, before we start, you know, one of the things about Women's Spaces is dedicated to ordinary women doing extraordinary things. And you are an ordinary woman, and you have done extraordinary things.
Very ordinary.
So, you know, I mean, I just knowing you and just talking to you, I can see that you're very, I mean, you're just a sweetheart, just to say it quite simply. So talk about your beginnings and what made you decide to become a journalist, especially, I mean, when we look at today, the bad rap that journalists are getting, it's just amazing. What was your encouragement? And as a woman, what were some of the challenges that you met early on? Because there were not that many, it's not like we see women all the time, but back then, we very, very few women were in journalism.
That's true. Well, I think I always wrote, and I had an older brother who was a journalist, and I was very proud of him. He was the sports editor of the Stars and Stripes in Europe for 30-some years, and he was considerably older than I, but he was writing for the local paper when he was younger, and I was a kid. And I was impressed by that, and I always wanted to write. I grew up in a very small town as really an only child because my siblings were so much older. And I read books were my company. There was no other, I mean, there was one other child in the town I lived in. That sounds silly, but in Humboldt County it can be. So outside of school, there was no playmate unless it was planned. And books were, I remember one birthday, probably about my sixth birthday, where everybody who came brought me a book. And I was absolutely delighted. I didn't get anything but books. So I think it's the writing that took me to newspapers. And when I went to school, I worked on the school newspaper, the school yearbook. I was the editor of the Oak Leaf at the junior college. I went to Cal, but I went with the intention of being a teacher. And if I can explain the split personality there. You know, my mother was from the Azores. She was first generation. And I grew up with a lot of my mother's relatives very much around me because my father died when I was young. And they were Portuguese immigrants from the Azores. My mother had come very young and didn't have an accent and didn't marry a Portuguese, but the others were Portuguese families. And with the old style in the Portuguese community in Sacramento. And in that society, women didn't become journalists. Women became, and I like to joke and say, they were either nurses or teachers or nuns. And I couldn't imagine my family being supportive. Not my mother would. My mother was, but the others being supportive in terms of my being a journalist.
So where, as a young girl, I mean, here you are, not only a woman, but you're also in a culture that really would not support a woman becoming that outspoken to be a journalist. And by the way, I just want to share something with you. I also was a journalist. I got my AA degree in journalism from Los Angeles City College, and I was editorial page manager. And I remember confronting somebody and all of a sudden them recognizing that I was a woman. Why was I there? I mean, that was the question that was asked. But where did you get your confidence as a young girl? I mean, to break out of that mold and to do your thing, so to speak.
I can't answer that. I don't know. I suppose from my mother, who had come to this country alone, or with an older brother when she was 13 years old and never saw her parents again, and made a life. And I think any credit that's due is due my mom.
So I can see where the inspiration of her coming to a strange country, that, you know, I know I'm only first generation on my father's side, you know, the idea of not knowing the language, not really feeling a part and still surviving and becoming, you know, whatever she decided to do. So that's wonderful. Congratulations. What was your mother's first name?
Marianna, actually.
Marianna. Well, congratulations. A special tribute to Marianna for encouraging you in that way. Well, you know, what made you choose to be, suddenly you found yourself becoming a historian? I mean, not just a journalist, but somebody who actually was a historian. How did that come about?
Well, when I left JC and went to Berkeley, I majored, as I said, I was going to be a teacher. So I was on an education track, and I was an English major and a history minor. And I got very interested in both. And actually, you know, I had a contract at home. These Reading fires have brought this high, really, to the front of my mind. When I graduated from Cal in 1957, and I had worked for one summer at the Call Bulletin in San Francisco as a copy girl, and for three summers at the Press Democrat as their vacation relief reporter, and I had a contract at home from Shasta High School in Reading to teach English and drama and journalism at the brand new high school up there in 1957. And I came within 3 or 4 days of signing that contract because there was no opening at the Press Democrat for me to stay. And just before I signed it, in July, just this month, somebody who was a reporter, worked on City Desk, left, and they hired me. And I never went to, I probably couldn't show my face in the school district in Reading because they had to go find another teacher. But I've never, ever regretted it. And, of course, I was already keeping company with John, with my soon-to-be husband, and he was saying, you know, you can't go to Reading. It's too far away. And I was saying, but I have no money and I have no job except that. So this is how I got into full-time journalism, and I've been with the PD since 57 full-time.
Wow, that's amazing. So not only did you become a writer for them, but you also met your husband through them?
Oh, yes. I met my husband. He was the chief photographer at the Press Democrat,
Always
said was like being a full general in some army, in some very small army, because I think there were only two, sometimes three photographers. But he had worked for the paper he'd worked there since 1948 when he left junior college.
So what was the Press Democrat like back then? I mean, who were this was the first owners, right?
Well, the first family. Mr. Finley had died in the 40s, but the Finley family still owned it, yes.
So what was it like? What was the atmosphere? Women were there?
Just the society editors. And there was, you know, in those days, all newspapers, even the big ones, the Chronicle, the Examiner, the New York Times, they only had one woman or two at the most on the city desk as full-time reporters. They were society writers. They were church writers and food writers, but they were not reporters. And that's why I was so lucky to get an opening, because there weren't any women, and there was a job open.
How did what do you think it was that attracted them to you and allowed you that kind
of
space?
Well, I had been there for three summers.
Oh, okay.
I had worked there 3 summers, so they had a pretty good idea what I could do and couldn't do.
But you were still a phenomenal, you were something exceptional. I mean, there were hardly any women, and there you were.
I was lucky.
What were some of your challenges back then? I mean, did people make remarks to you? Were you given, you know, what was
no,
it like?
There were a couple of times that the editor who became sort of like my surrogate father, because he was my editor for 40 years, and he just, even to when he died in the way up in his 90s, he regarded me as, he would call me on the phone, and in his last years, he only died like year before last, he would call me, and he never said who he was, he just started talking about what he wanted. Can you get me this book, or can you get me this, you know, this kind of thing, just like I still work for him. So I think he had faith in me, but there were things he wouldn't send me on. I never made a fuss about it, I just accepted it. As I said, he was kind of like my father. But if it was something, I remember getting a tip to go out to make a raid on a still from the sheriff's office.
Oh,
they
really?
Called me and said, "We're going if you want to go. And, you know, meet us at such and such a place." And when I told the boss, he said, "No, that's not for a woman. We'll send somebody else." And they sent somebody else. And I was a little miffed because it was my story. But I didn't question it. And it, you know, things changed.
We busted bid. Wonderful for you when you start seeing more women come into journalism.
It's
and more, you know,
amazing.
You could be more mentoring to them.
Exactly.
And then you taught at the Santa Rosa JC, and then did you teach at Sonoma State also, or it was
I taught at JC in the evening college. I taught every semester for what, 35 years, I guess, a 6-week class on the history of Sonoma County. And then I taught at the lifelong learning program at Sonoma State, about 6 different 6-week sessions on Sonoma County history and varying aspects of it.
So it's so interesting, Gay, when you start thinking about it. You followed your heart when you went to the Press Democrat, but still you were a teacher. You ended up teaching classes.
And,
you
know, it's ironic, isn't it?
Almost like you created both worlds for yourself and were highly successful in it.
I didn't do it for myself. They just kind of dropped in my lap.
Well, you had
even
the skill.
History. Yeah.
No, you had the skill and you had the tenacity, you know, to say, "Okay, I'll do it." I remember when I became a journalism major. I actually became a journalism major at the advice of a teacher, because he said I had writing skills, but I needed to learn more about punctuation and sentencing. And he said he felt journalism would be the best thing for me, and it was an amazing experience. I actually became the editorial page manager, and I was shocked. I think I was the second woman in the school to become an editorial page manager. And I remember the teacher saying, "You know, there's, you know, people are going to be watching you, Elaine." I said, "Oh, my God, I hope they don't look too close." Well, anyway, you know, history is such an important thing. Why do you think history is so important? Why do we need to know our history? In fact, I was having a debate with my brother, and I even said to him, "You know, you don't know the historical context of what you're talking about. What do you think is important about history?"
Well, the simple answer to that, Elaine, is that so we don't make the same mistakes twice. But it doesn't seem to work all that well, even though we do. You know, even though the attention is called or attention is paid, I think that we can't know what we are if we don't know where we've come from. It's just like talking about my mother and my Portuguese relatives. That shaped who I am, and what the people who went before in Santa Rosa certainly shaped what the town has become, for better and for worse. And I think that it's important to know that and to try to use it as a guide to going forward.
Well, two things that I think is important. You know, one of the things is we have such a rich women's history in this community. You know, do you recall any of some of the historical events that women created during your time, and also bringing it up to date?
Oh, well, of course, Molly Murphy McGregor, you know, the Women's History Project looms large in that area, and and there were women all along. Going back to Native Americans, going back to Essie Parrish, who really kind of codified almost the Kashaya Pomo language. She was a seer, a dreamer, and the leader of her people, and she was remarkable. I used to see her. I'm lucky enough to have lived long enough to have met Essie and to have seen her and Mabel McKay when they were weaving baskets at the fair. They would go and sit at the fair and talk to people as they came by, and they were remarkable women.
So the idea they were able to pass on Native American history, which is very rich in this community.
That's exactly right.
I think we have more Pomos. Have we had more Pomos in this area than other Native Americans?
Two language groups that met here. They don't call themselves tribes, I don't think. At least they didn't used to. But the Southern Pomo were predominantly everything from the north down to the Santa Rosa Valley and through the Santa Rosa Valley and toward Petaluma, and then along the coast from Bodega Bay south and into Petaluma, and across was the Coast Miwok and into Marin and all the way to the San Francisco Bay. That's the Coast Miwok group. And they met the Susuns over somewhere around Sonoma.
Well, you know, we're coming up.
And those are the American names for those tribes. They have other names for themselves.
Oh, in other words, there were American names adopted and then for their own tribal names. That's interesting. You know, that's one thing that I found out through doing this interview. I mean, you can go into history and dive into so many different areas that you covered. It's just amazing. I mean, 8,000 columns. I mean, that's a lot of writing. That really is 6 days a week, you know, at the beginning.
Yeah, that was crazy. I had to have been nuts to do that.
Well, we're coming up on 150 year anniversary, which is amazing to me. I mean, I've lived here almost 50 years now. So here, you know, the county was only 100 years when it's Santa Rosa that's coming up at 150. Was there any indigenous activity or any, how were they involved in creating our city? Do you have any idea?
Creating the city, probably not. Because, first of all, the 150 years is when we actually became a chartered city, which was 1868. The town of Santa Rosa was formed and the plat map filed officially in 1854. So it's a little bit older. It's 14 years older than 150 years. And before that, before 1837, it was Native American country. And in 1837 was when this whole area was granted. It wasn't theirs to grant, but the Mexican government granted it as a land grant to a woman named Maria Carrillo, one of the very few women to own land grants in California. She was the mother-in-law of General Vallejo, who was the man making the grants.
So they gave her the grant, and then how does that work? Did she turn the grant over, or how does that work?
When California became a state, they agreed with the treaty that ended the Mexican War, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, that all Mexican land claims would be honored. And by this time, Maria Carrillo had died. She died in 49, and this was in 50. And her children inherited certain portions of it. Julio Carrillo inherited what is now downtown Santa Rosa. And the government agreed that all Mexican land claims would be honored. And it took a long time, but eventually they mostly were.
And that's what was the evolution of Santa Rosa.
So Julio owned the land from the Carrillo Adobe out in the orchard beyond Montgomery Village there, downtown, downstream all the way to probably all the way down Santa Rosa Creek to out on the Santa Rosa Plain, the Laguna probably. And he sold a piece of it to some American venturers who had come up and rented the adobe and opened a trading post there. And he sold a piece of it, and they agreed that they would put in a plaza, that he would put up half the land, and they would put up half the land, and they would build a town around it. And that's what they did. They moved downstream from the adobe. Even a little makeshift town out there that has started. They put churches and blacksmith shops on logs and rolled them downstream to the plaza, which is now, of course, Old Courthouse Square.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's what I mean. There's just so, and there's so much that we can cover. So I think right now, okay, we're going to just take a little musical break here. And I want to play the song, What a Wonderful World. And it's sung by a woman by the name of Leanne Ames. And the reason I chose this song is just to remind us that even with the conflicts that are going on, even what's going on in the world today, that we live in a wonderful town, we live in a wonderful place, and that we need to remind ourselves every once in a while how beautiful life really is. So here we go with Leon Rhymes singing What a Wonderful World, and when we come back, we will continue this wonderful conversation with historian Gay LeBaron here in Santa Rosa.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful. Skies of blue, clouds of white, bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. So pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? What a wonderful world. Ooh, yeah, yeah. And I think to myself, what a wonderful
You know, when you think about it and you break it down, it really is a wonderful world. There's so much beauty around us if we just take a moment to appreciate it. You know, oftentimes we get so caught up in the negativity of everything that's happening that we forget that we live on a planet in the middle of a universe, and it's just a miracle that we're here to begin with. Anyway, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces. I am your host, Elaine B. Holt, and with me in the studio this morning is journalist and historian here from Sonoma County, Gay LeBaron. Welcome back again, Gay.
Thank you very much.
Well, this has just been a fascinating topic, just talking about all the ins and outs, what happened in our Northern California city county here, Sonoma County. But I'd like to talk about a little bit more about the women's history here, because we have such a rich history. We have the Women's History Project, of course. And, you know, Molly McGregor and I went to Sonoma State together. And I remember walking on the campus and her telling me, says, you know, there's no women. She's talking about women in art, and I so help me. God, I said to her, oh, you mean there are women artists? I mean, that's how little that we knew about our history. So tell us a little bit about some of the history that you know about women here in Sonoma County. I know one of the first board, right now we have a majority of three women on our board of supervisors, but I can go back way back when Helen Rudy ran for supervisor, and that was just, and even though to this day she'll say, no, I didn't run as a woman, the bottom line is she won and she ran and she won as a woman. So yes. Talk a little bit about that history that you know.
Well, it's true that Helen was the first, and Helen Putnam was not far behind her from Petaluma. And Helen Putnam, too, was – Helen Rudy had been – I always like to say that Helen Rudy was not only the first woman to be elected to the Board of Supervisors. She wasn't the first one to run. There had been a couple who had – Hugh Cotting's mother ran for supervisor way back in the 1930s. But Helen was the first to win. But she was also, because she came from school board and PTA background, she was the first woman on the school board to be elected to the not to be secretary. Always, there had been other women. There were always a token, or usually for a long time, a token woman on the five-person Board of Education in Santa Rosa. And she was always the secretary.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I have a friend who was once at a meeting of bankers. She worked for a bank, and they said, we have somebody should take notes, and they pushed a pad in front of her, and she pushed it back. And I thought, hooray, she made her gesture not to be secretary.
You know, it's really interesting how, as women, one of the issues that I take up is that we must not forget our history. And why I think it's important is because the strides that we have made have been so difficult.
Yeah.
It has not been easy. I mean, I'll never forget when I watched Iron Jawed Angels for the first time, and I realized that we only got the vote by one vote.
Yeah.
And I thought, wait a minute, it wasn't even unanimous. It was just one vote, and it was a young man whose mother said, if you don't vote for this, you're not going to be able to come home.
Right.
So, I mean, when you look at that, and women seem to forget their history and don't pay attention to
it. That's right. And, you know, Helen Putnam, I started to say, she had been mayor of Petaluma. She wasn't the first woman mayor in Sonoma County. That was Joan McGrath in Sonoma in the 50s. But Helen was mayor for a long, long time, and in Petaluma. And she was the first woman ever to be president of the League of California Cities, which was also very significant.
So we have such a rich history.
So we had the two Helens at once on the board.
That's amazing. But also the history, particularly the Women's History Project. I mean, that... You know, turning it into a Women's History Month, to think that it was born out of our community. I was at an event and I did a survey. I just did a mini survey and I went around asking people, it was Women's History Month. I said, do you know this is Women's History Month? You knew it grew out of Sonoma County? Not one woman under the age of maybe 50 even knew that that happened in our community. And it's so important, I mean, because it's our history. You know, one of the things that Molly McGregor came up with that I always remember is our history is our strength. And like you said, if we don't know our history, we make the same mistakes over and over again without realizing the consequences. So it's really, really important. Well, now for our final question, you know, this is something that I tend to ask most of the women on the show, and that is, if there is a woman out there that is interested in becoming a journalist or interested in pursuing the type of career you have, what kind of advice would you give her? What type of education do you think would be beneficial? And why do you think that women need to get more involved, say, in the historical perspective of journalism?
Oh, I think that they need to be just as involved as men, and I think that, you know, that there isn't even a male dominated area anymore. I don't believe there have been women editors of the New York Times. There are women columnists, in the Times and in the Washington Post. Katharine Graham ran the Washington Post, owned the Washington Post, and did it well for years. I think that advice I would give anybody who's going into journalism, male or female, would be to read, not to ignore the fact that, that what has been written before, not just journalism, but books, even novels, the American treasury, and you know, in some ways, the world treasury is important. You got to have a background. It's one thing to know how to write. It's something else to know, have something to say. And to have something to say, you've got to have a good, firm background. And I think that, now I think journalism school is required for most newspapers. It used to be that when I got hired, I wasn't a journalism major. But now J school, or communications as it's known in this day and age, is necessary. I don't think that newspapers would even look at an application that didn't have that. And more journalists end up going to law school first, or being experts in something else, which is not a bad thing either if you're going to be on a big newspaper and specialize.
Well, another thing that you mentioned that I thought was really interesting, that when you went to junior high school and high school, that you were involved in newspapers, you were involved in with the yearbook, you were involved in writing for the school paper, and those are kind of foundation that you can't take away from a person.
Yeah, you know, you can get. I come from the days of hot type, of hot lead, when newspapers were made with linotypes and molten pots of molten lead that made the forms that went on the press. And so you had plenty. You got it working on school papers. You learn makeup by watching the printers put it all together. You learned the real basics of it.
You know, it's interesting.
It's much cleaner today.
No, but it's really interesting because my father actually works for a newspaper. He worked for the Daily News. He wasn't a journalist. He worked in the press room, but he was worked for the Daily News and worked for the Los Angeles Examiner. And that's when I first got. In fact, he read the paper from front page to back page every single day. And when I went to New York when I was 18, he arranged for me to get the Daily News every day. To make sure that I didn't forget about California.
Did you see the story last week that the Daily News is going out of business?
I know. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. It's pathetic, actually. I mean, yeah. Some of these great, great newspapers. I mean, but our world is changing. And if we don't like it, we have to become more involved. We have to speak out more. More people need to be involved more in the historical context of what's going on in their community. Well, we're coming to the end of the segment, and I mean, this has just been absolutely so informative and so delightful for me, and I hope it has been, I'm sure, for our listening audience. Any last things that you would like to cover? Any last things? I know you're working on some projects. Anything that you'd like to share? Anything that people you feel should look out for as far as your articles go?
Not really. I've got I'm involved in co-authoring a book about Fountain Grove, which we hope to have out one of these days soon. And we didn't mean it to have such good timing, but the fact that the Round Barn and the last of that community, and this is a book about the whole community of the utopian community of Fountain Grove that started the whole, where the name comes from.
Well, you know, you all, just before we say goodbye, just said that I kind of overlooked is that you've written two other books on history. You've written the history. Why don't you mention those books?
They have very catchy titles, very creative. One is called Santa Rosa, a 19th Century Town, and the other one is called Santa Rosa, a 20th Century Town. And the 20th Century Town is out of print, but you can pick it up on Amazon used or at Treehorn at used bookstores. But the 19th Century Town is still available in paperback at Corix or Copperfields.
Is there any website or any that you'd like people to go to that you are involved in? How about how they can get in touch with you, or if they have any?
The best way is to call the paper. You mentioned Dominique, and she'll take a message and send it along, and I'll get back to you, because if I use my home phone number, I can't do that.
But, you know, it's interesting. I just want to do a little shout-out for Dominique because she is just such a great resource for that paper. She's so knowledgeable and always leads you in the right direction. And I want to thank her from the bottom of my heart for getting in touch with you and for helping to make this interview possible. So any last words before we say goodbye?
No, it's just been a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you so much, Gayla Barron. I mean, I can't thank you enough. Well, folks, that's it for our show, you know, but we do have a few moments left, but I want to thank Gay Teresa LeBaron. I love that middle name.
Nobody uses my middle name anymore. I'm surprised.
Is an American columnist, author, teacher, and local historian of Sonoma County. She wrote for the Press Democrat here in Sonoma County from 1961 until, now get this, semi-retirement in 2001. She's still writing two articles a month, and she's also co-authored two books on the history of Santa Rosa and is presently working on a book on the history of our own Fountain Grove, which unfortunately was one of the disasters of our county, but a very, very interesting history. A special reminder, Tell Your Friends Women's Spaces will be aired again tonight at 11 o'clock on Monday evenings. I'm so excited I get to listen to my own program. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements, and like you saw at the beginning of the show, if you have any birthday or anniversaries that you'd like to have mentioned in the air, please do not hesitate to email me at Elaine, E-L-A-I-N-E, at womenspaces.com. Remember, two S's in the middle. Also, I want to remind folks, our children are our future, and we must never lose sight of that. And as many of people have heard how upset I am about what's happening with these children being pulled from their parents at the border. Why am I upset? Because what could happen to any mother or father's child can happen to your child. If one child is not safe, no children are safe. And we have to recognize that. We have to remember that. And I want to encourage you again to please become at least a sustaining member here at KBBF, or just become a member. All you have to do is go on our website, www.kbbf.org, and go into a membership, and it'll just take you through step by step. And also to remember that Women's Spaces again airs at 11 o'clock tonight, and it's important you can tell your friends to go ahead and listen to it. That's on 89.1 FM. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. I want to thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you next week.
Is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, July 30th, 2018.